Involvement with the criminal justice system is life-changing. It matters.
Having a justice system that works is a really important part of a democratic society.
I'm Penelope Gibbs, Director of Transform Justice.
I'm Rob Allen. I've worked in and around criminal justice all my career.
This is the Transform Justice podcast, throwing light on the criminal justice system.
Hearing from people who know.
It's about whether the system's fair.
And what can be done to make it better.
In today's podcast, we'll be asking whether children are treated fairly in police custody. When we say children, we mean children from 10 to 18, who in this country can be arrested, prosecuted and imprisoned, using broadly the same system as adults. Rob and I are joined by Mel Stooks, a lawyer who represents many children in police custody for the firm G.T. Stewart, and Dr. Vicky Kemp, who has spent years researching what happens in police custody. Rob, I think a lot of people think about police custody through the lens of that TV programme, 24 Hours in Police Custody. But we're talking imprisonment, aren't we? And that's not often thought about.
You're right, Penelope. They can't leave. They have their freedom deprived. And I suppose it hasn't had the attention that prison gets because the periods are relatively short ones. But inspectorate reports do reveal some quite worrying things about the experience people have in police custody, both adults and children. You get examples of the police not obeying the law that applies in these situations. You get examples of conditions which are not really suitable, particularly for children. And I have to say, it doesn't seem to be something that the police are giving a priority to.
Mel, you represent children as a lawyer in police custody. Can you tell us what kind of reasons why police detain children? As we say, then they can't leave in police custody.
Well, the usual reason that's given is to preserve evidence, and that is usually by way of interviewing the young people. I recently represented a young 15-year-old boy. He was found in possession of two mobile phones. They had been reported stolen in an earlier robbery. There was no evidence to suggest that he had committed that robbery, and his detention started with a period of being held incommunicado.
So, no means of communicating with the outside world.
This 15-year-old boy couldn't even call his mum because they said that the robbery suspects were still outstanding.
I'm confused. Like, they've arrested him on suspicion of committing a robbery, but they're saying that they're still looking for the people who were committing the robbery. So, that doesn't make sense to me.
It didn't make sense to us. They also said that they were looking for CCTV where they believed that the robbery had taken place. Now, the 15-year-old child was not interviewed until 7:05 the following evening.
So how many hours is this that they've been there?
About 20 hours.
So this child is in custody for 20 hours before the big event, which is the police interview.
That's correct, yes. Now, to put this into context, he was a young person who has recognised learning difficulties. In this particular child's case, he had speech and language difficulties. So the interview was always going to be the most stressful experience that he could anticipate. When he was interviewed, there was no CCTV evidence. They hadn't arrested anybody else for these robberies. And in fact, there was no evidence that they could put to him in interview. So it was a short interview. The officers decided to charge him, and he was kept in police custody a further night to be taken to court the following morning. Shortly after that hearing, the Crown Prosecution Service, the lawyers who bring the case on behalf of the police, decided there was no evidence to pursue the charges of robbery. And those charges did not go ahead.
So they interviewed him without much evidence. They never had much evidence, but they still charged him and kept him overnight after they charged him. That just seems like a waste of everybody's time.
It was a waste of everybody's time, but more importantly, it was exceptionally stressful for this child.
So Vicky, in terms of that experience of custody, I mean, I would argue that it's also incredibly stressful for adults, but what is that experience and is it stressful for children and what makes it stressful?
It's incredibly stressful. It's traumatising. And it shocked me. I've been a researcher going into police custody for many years now. The fact that you've got a child in there can be forgotten. They're away from home. They're frightened of what's going on. They want somebody to talk to. I think that's the most desperate thing for me. They're seeing detention officers regularly checking on them, but it might be just looking through the hatch or saying, are you okay? Or would you like something to eat? There's nobody actually going in and sitting down until the interview and saying, how are you? I was talking to one young man and he said, it's awful. It's inhuman. I feel as if I'm not being treated like a human being. And I think that's quite shocking. I'm going into cells and seeing youngsters and there's a big age gap, but I'm connecting because they're so isolated. I said to one young chap, can I come back to talk to you after the interview? And he said, yes. And I said, you can change your mind and I'll check with you. He said, no, you're my friend now. And I found that really sad. And on average, they're waiting 11 hours before the police interview and they're being detained on average for about 14 hours.
Do you think, I mean, in the case that you told us about, Mel, I mean, are the police doing this in a way deliberately to put pressure on young people to admit that they've done something wrong or to suggest other suspects, their friends who've also been involved? Is that part of the rationale for doing it, do you think?
I think it may be. But in all honesty, I think that the reality is there is a lack of police training for how to deal with children in the police part of the criminal justice system. All too often, police are interviewing children without using appropriate language, without recognising that they are not adults and are experiencing police custody in a very different way to how adults would react.
Mel, talk about the cell and the experience. Are the cells completely different or are they the same cells we've seen on like 24 hours in police custody?
Well, children are supposed to be placed in a detention room. It's meant to be more child friendly, more accessible. I am not sure that is anything other than a cell with a different name. They're very stark. Very few of them have access to outside light. There is no means of telling the time. There is nothing to do. There is the same plasticky mattress on the same bench with the same blue itchy blanket as if you were in an adult cell.
Vicky, have you found that in practice when you've visited? Is the experience for children much different for adults or pretty much the same?
Pretty much the same. There are some custody suites now have got foam footballs that people are being offered and some sort of chalkboards and that sort of thing. But by and large, there is no difference from the cells that children are put in compared to adults. It's quite shocking. They're children, they're away from home, they're frightened of what's going on. They want somebody to talk to.
Children have access to these people called appropriate adults. It's part of the law that, you know, somebody is called by the police who is either somebody they say they want, like their parent, or they are people who are volunteers or paid to do that role. Surely, you know, those people are there to keep them company.
No, the legislation doesn't allow them to be there to keep them company, but it does allow them to be in contact and it does allow them to visit. But by and large, there's no contact until the police interview. And in all the appropriate adult schemes, the vast majority are coming down in time for the interview. The lawyer's the same. They're not having contact with their lawyer until the interview. So for that 10 hours that they're waiting on average, they're not speaking to anybody who's able to tell them what's happening, that they can discuss their fears and concerns with.
And one of the things that a person who is arrested and detained at a police station is entitled to is, first of all, a telephone call to anyone who needs to know that they are there or who they want to speak to. And secondly, they're entitled to speak to a lawyer. But all too often, that telephone call is delayed because there are too few phones in the custody suite or there are too few staff to get somebody out of the detention room to let them speak on the phone. And the frequent reason given for this is that they're just too busy. There isn't time. There is no recognition of the fact that they have a child who has no idea what is going on, who actually needs to speak to somebody who can break down the process to them over the phone. Even if they don't fully understand it, it's human contact explaining what their rights are and what is happening. And that is something that is all too frequently delayed in my experience.
Mm. Well, one thing I'm not quite sure about is, what are the police actually doing during this 10, 11 hours before they question the person? Are they busy collecting evidence, preparing to interview the person, or is it a waiting game? What's going on in your experience, Mel?
Well, the usual reasons for delay would be that they are taking witness statements, looking for CCTV, maybe looking for any eyewitnesses. However, when you do attend the police station, the police are supposed to tell you a little bit about why the child has been arrested and what evidence they have. And it is a little difficult to see what the police have actually been doing during that time.
Why isn't there more challenge to that? Vicky, isn't there some system where, you know, somebody somewhere in the system is going, the hours are ticking, something ought to happen here?
Well, it used to happen when lawyers used to go to the custody suites, because they'd be called down to the custody suite and they could say to the custody sergeant, why isn't the interview happening? You've got these large out-of-town custody suites now. Lawyers are now paid a fixed fee, which isn't sufficient really to cover the work, so they're not going down earlier. So they're waiting till the police interview. My argument is they have the clock, if you like. You can have 24 hours when you're arrested. That's the initial clock. And I don't know why we don't have a separate clock for children to identify the fact that they are children. So why not have a 12 hours? That's your maximum. You can extend that if it's a serious investigation, if the police need more time. But it would highlight the fact that you've got a child here and then put the police under pressure to find that interviewer to complete those investigations.
So Mel, I mean, it's called 24 hours in police custody and they can keep children for 24 hours without getting kind of senior permission for longer. Do you think they could do it in 12?
I see no reason why not. A lot of times we don't see exactly what has been achieved in these dead periods while we're waiting for an interview to take place. And I think if the clock is shortened, there will be a much greater focus on dealing more swiftly and getting the interview done.
And can I just clarify, are we really talking about serious crimes here? That the police are really only doing this when they absolutely need to? Vicky, has your research found that we're talking about serious things that really the police do need to investigate? And if they do need to find evidence, interview people, that's their job after all.
I was just going to say the police have got wide discretion. And so I'm quite shocked to see some quite minor cases being brought into custody. Sometimes it's because the police don't have a choice. So there may be a domestic assault. Something's happened in a child's home and the police are called.
What, that child, say, has been accused of assaulting their mother or something like that?
Assaulting their mother, assaulting a sibling. There's an argument. It gets heated. A parent can ring the police. The police come. There's one chap I had, a 17-year-old. He was actually arrested and detained for criminal damage because he broke a plate during an argument, and that was the only complaint against him, and he was detained for 14 hours.
And at the end of that, you know,
there was no further action.
So in fact, he was, as it were, let off. I mean, I'm not surprised he was let off. He broke a plate, but that seems quite a low-level thing to be imprisoned in police custody for.
The problem is that the police assess that that child needs to be taken away from the home to allow things to quieten down, and they don't have anywhere else that they can take them, because that child, and a lot of these children, should never be brought into custody, but the police can't take them away from their home at 1 o'clock in the morning, say, well, you're on your own now. So in a way, with those sorts of cases, if social services were involved, then they would be able to deal and they wouldn't need to be arrested and detained at all. We have a gravity score with crime, where one is the most minor, shoplifting and that sort of thing, and gravity score 4 is your most serious, rapes and manslaughter and perhaps dwelling house burglary and that sort of thing, supplying Class A drugs. And I don't know why the gravity score isn't applied to police custody. And I would suggest that just, you know, the most serious cases should come into custody. It is a prison.
Mel, what do you think? Is it mostly serious violent cases that you deal with amongst children in custody, or is it this wide range that Vicky's talked about?
No, I think Vicky's entirely right. There's a very wide range and insufficient discretion used. Very recently, I represented a 16-year-old boy. He lived with his grandmother, completely good character, full-time education, and he was accused of criminal damage to a door.
What did that mean? Criminal damage to a door is like, you know, had he kicked the door in? What had happened?
No, nothing as serious as kicking a door in. He had thrown some eggs at it.
He'd thrown eggs at a door?
Yes. And they arrested him at approximately 11 o'clock at night. And he was not interviewed until 2:30 the following afternoon. Now, in my opinion, this is a child who should have been taken home by those police officers. And they could have spoken to his grandmother and said, look, can you bring him in for an interview tomorrow? He could have come in at 2:30 the following afternoon and had an interview without having to spend his first night in police custody. And as Vicky quite rightly identified, criminal damage is such a low-level offence that on the gravity score, it is something that a child of good character would not even go to court for if he had done the offence.
So what we're talking about is children are imprisoned in police custody for things that they could never be imprisoned by the court for.
That's entirely correct, Penelope.
Mm. And does this experience of being detained, sometimes for up to 23 hours, as you say, what impact does that have when the questioning does take place? How does the, what sounds pretty awful time that people are having, how does that play out in terms of what happens when the police start interviewing them? Mel, have you got any examples of that?
Well, it's very difficult for the children and young people to trust anybody that they then see after such a period of isolation. I think there's a great sense of disorientation. The first question I'm quite regularly asked is, what time is it? And the lack of trust is quite difficult to overcome in what is then a very short period of time to make a meaningful connection. As far as children in police custody are concerned, the solicitor is just another adult who is part of the system who they may not know, they may not recognise. It might be the first time they've ever met. And it takes time to build up trust to tell someone your version of events in the hope that they will do the best by you. By the time they've been in there many hours, their automatic urge is to get this over and done with as quickly as possible. They're definitely not going to tell you whether they have any learning difficulties or neurodivergence issues that mean that they need to be spoken to in a slightly different way. And sometimes there are admissions to offences that just don't need to take place, because as far as the child can tell, if they say they've done it, it will be all over and done with much quicker without any thought to long-term consequences. I don't know what Vicky's experience of that is.
I very much agree with that. Where I see youngsters in custody, if they've got a lawyer, I breathe a sigh of relief. And I had one youngster, 13 years old, and he had neurodiverse issues, and I got quite monosyllabic responses. And when I spoke to his mother, she said that he didn't want a lawyer because he wanted to get out of there more quickly. And she insisted that he had a lawyer. And I'm just worried that those sorts of cases, that could have proceeded without a lawyer. And he in my questions, he would answer, he would just basically say yes. And sometimes he was contradicting himself. And that would have been a nightmare in the police interview, because he wouldn't understand the consequences. He'd just give the police what they wanted, and then the consequences are further down the road. So I think that it would be good if we could have mandatory legal advice. I think when you're dealing with children in custody, it's far too dangerous for them to be in for such a long time and think, oh, well, I'll just admit it and I'll be able to get out and then I can sort it.
When you say mandatory legal advice, Vicky, so is the position now that children don't have a right to a lawyer when they're arrested? Or do you mean that they have the right to decline that and they shouldn't be allowed to decline it?
I think they shouldn't be allowed to decline it. They have a right to a lawyer. But when you go into custody and you're asked, do you want a lawyer? If you don't then speak to somebody for 10 hours or more, you don't know if you've got a lawyer or not. Or if you think, and this is quite common, oh, I'm in here for 10 hours because my lawyer hasn't turned up. I'm going to change my mind. And so it's not the lawyer that's causing the delay. The lawyer is waiting for the police to be ready for the interview. But often young people think it's the lawyer that they're waiting for.
So Mel, you gave an example of, you know, that children might be so keen to get out of the police station that they admit to something they have done. I suppose some people would say, well, isn't that a good thing that they admit to something they have done? But also, do some children admit to things that they actually haven't done at all?
Oh, I think my concern was mainly the ones who admit to things that they haven't done. It's the concern that they will say anything just to speed things up and get out of there. And sometimes children will admit to things that they haven't done at all because they think if they say, well, it was me, then that's the end of it and they'll be out.
Vicky, have you ever seen examples of children feeling pressure to plead guilty or you think have admitted to things they haven't done?
Yes, I think that I've seen that, but most are having a lawyer. And so you have that safeguard. The lawyer's able to say to them, well, there's no evidence against you. You're not there to incriminate yourself. So they can look after those issues. The other thing is that they don't understand whether they've done something or not. It's quite complicated. Stealing from a shop, people think, well, yes, I'm guilty because I walked out with it. But when you ask, well, did you know that you'd got the item? No, I'd forgotten all about it. There are legal ingredients that a lawyer will check on. And that's important. So a lot of the time, they don't know whether they're guilty or not in law.
Yes, that's entirely true. So a child who was, I think he was about 14, was stopped with some tools on him. He was arrested for going equipped to steal. And he was at the police station and he told me that he had these tools on him because he'd been going to his friend's house to help him mend his bike. But the police had told him that having the tools on him meant that he was guilty of an offence, so perhaps he should admit to that, where, of course, there was an innocent explanation for those tools, so of course he wasn't guilty of going equipped to steal something.
So going forward to the questioning, there are various things that might happen. They might be charged, or they might be released for a period of time, still being investigated. What are the options, Mel, and what are the kind of advantages and disadvantages of them?
Well, for the low-level offences that have been admitted to, that would usually result in a referral to the local youth offending service, who will then make a decision which best out-of-court disposal they can give. If there haven't been admissions to any form of offence and there are further investigations to be done, either the person can be bailed to return. The child is under an obligation to return to the police station by appointment, and that could be for further interview or for a decision to charge. The other option is being released under investigation, which is becoming more and more common, even for children, and that results in them being in a period of limbo. They are simply told that at some point in the future, they will be notified of the outcome of the investigation. But we have numerous examples of children who are released under investigation and some 1-2 years later receive a summons in the post telling them that they have to go to court for that offence.
So in the cases where the police do decide to charge a child, what are the options there?
So they can be released either with or without conditions on their bail, or they can be kept overnight to go to the next available court sitting. There is an obligation on the police to contact social services to find out if there is any suitable accommodation that they could stay at rather than be in police detention. But the very sad reality is that there is a shortage of those types of places that children can stay. And most children arrive at court the following day, having spent yet another night in police custody.
And in your view, is that decision to keep them in the police station rather than allow them to go home and just go to court themselves the next day, is that the correct decision often, or do you think that's risk averse and unnecessary sometimes?
I think the custody sergeants are massively disadvantaged by not having the input of the youth offending service like we do at the first appearance at court. When a child is in custody at court, the youth offending service are asked to provide a bail support package, a written document setting out what they would recommend would enable that child's release. And if that document were made available earlier, say at the charging stage, where a decision is made on bail, it may be that there are some different outcomes at the police station.
Is one answer then for the youth offending service to get involved earlier in this process and actually perhaps to go down and provide some support and help to children when they're in the police station?
I just don't understand why youth offending services aren't involved in custody. There are a lot of children who go into custody who, because of an argument at home, get put into care. And they're not seeing any youth justice specialists at all in most custody suites that I've been in. So I think that for many reasons why we haven't got youth offending services involved when you've got children in custody, I just can't understand.
So to be fair to the police, they're making their decisions under quite difficult circumstances because they don't know much about that child or the child's home.
I think that from the moment of authorising detention, that's when a police officer decides, yes, we're going to take you in detention, there needs to be a lot more fact-finding going on. And I think this is where a lawyer can help, because a lawyer can ask questions and then they can provide information to the police. So right from the beginning, that information may be enough to say we don't have to detain this child. We don't actually have to take them into the criminal justice system. There are mental health issues here. There's a bereavement. There's different things that the police would say, actually, on a proportionality basis, it's better for them to go and help get help for what's gone wrong in their lives.
I think this is compounded because very often it's out of hours.
So we're talking the middle of the night here.
Yes. And so lawyers often do try to tell custody sergeants about other professionals who are involved with that child. So they would tell them the social services who are involved, whether they are known to the local youth offending team. And solicitors, if they have that information from either the family or the child, do make those representations when asking for bail, that should be taken into consideration. But the police want independent confirmation of that. And of course, those offices aren't always open.
Okay. Any last suggestions? If you were Minister of Justice or Home Secretary and could do one thing to improve this area, what would it be?
I think for me, we have a good youth justice system and we have what we call a child first approach. So they're seen as a child first and foremost. I don't see that in police custody and I can't understand why not. I think that police custody needs to be brought into the wider youth justice system so that you can call on that help and support. And it starts from the first time that child comes to the notice of the police.
And Mel?
So one thing that I would like to see change is relatively small, and that is the possibility of the children in police detention being given an iPad or similar device. It would give them something to do, it would give them access to a clock, and that might make their time there slightly less frustrating.
If I can just add to that as well, because we have been developing animations. So when I go in to see a child, I give them an animation about the research process. And to actually sit down with that tablet and go through it with the child, it breaks time up for them. But there's no reason why there can't be films on there, games on there, and a way of accessing your lawyer. And this can all be done with the police sort of supervision and just connecting to the lawyer. And I think then that the tablet should be able to facilitate that.
Thanks very much, Rob, Mel and Vicky. Information about children in police custody, including how to become an appropriate adult, are in the programme notes. And if you have an idea for this podcast, either an issue or a guest, do get in touch via the links in the notes. Thanks and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.